betas.
Surprise of many people. I mean, you're lucky to be. You'd be lucky to be a beta out there today.
Right.
Be a good position to be in.
Did you? I think we may have already talked about this previously, but did any of you guys see the thing they were doing at the drive-in theaters? The way that they restored the drive-in theaters in China.
Huh. Well, oh, they play sunsets on the screen.
Yeah,
now,
in the morning time, commuters could stop at the local drive-in because they were kind of going out of business, and they would have the sunrise on the drive-in screen that you could pull in and watch because you couldn't actually see it from your car.
Right.
But I mean, that's better than what they do in America, where they bulldoze drive-ins and build price choppers, right?
Is that what they do in America?
Of course they do.
I thought they stopped showing movies and started having swap and shops.
Swap meets. Yeah. Ray Tucky.
What is this, the 80s? The tricky trades and things like this?
Have you never been to the I-70 drive-in or the Boulevard drive-in or any other drive-in?
To
in
see
Kansas
movies,
City?
But I've never been to a tricky tray there or whatever you guys are talking about.
I don't know what a tricky tray is.
It's like a swap meet, but it's for Pollocks.
2 o'clock in the morning right here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Well, that's just swell. So the military is preparing for climate change. Because the Pentagon has said that over and over again, that the weather patterns changing on the Earth, the climate changing on the Earth, presents an extreme obstacle, major instability within things. And it's funny, at the bottom of this article, which is from the Business Insider, so people working on climate change should prepare for catastrophic success. I mean, look at how quickly gay rights changed in this country. 10 years ago, it was at best a fringe thing. Nowadays, it's much, much more accepted. Is that possible with climate change? I don't know. But 10 years ago, if you brought up the possibility we'd have gay marriage in dozens of states in 2014, a friend might have said, "Are you on drugs? When we get focused, we can do amazing things." Unfortunately, it's
I think the dinosaurs are dying off, so that helps too.
Unfortunately, it's at the last minute, and usually under duress. That's interesting, though, equating the solutions of climate change with gay marriage. But I guess people are happy for all kinds of reasons.
Other than Fred Phelps' death?
Because that's really the issue. Because when we talk about chemtrails or any of these other so-called geoengineering solutions to climate change, they're not actual solutions to climate change. They're not actual solutions to environmental degradation.
No.
And that would be the problem, though, right? I mean, it's all good to go, there's an issue with the way human beings pollute the environment. I mean, the air that is dense with pollution in China is the air that we eventually breathe, too. I mean, that's the whole concept with the planet, is that it all gets around, it all moves around.
Well, and you know, it's funny that, you know, and I'm sure you guys know this, but I was hearing, because a lot of people were talking about how bad it is in China and how it affects us, but the thing that's always left out about that is that the reason why it's so bad in China is because of all the factories over there that make stuff that we buy here. Right. So
it's all
give and take.
Well, no, it's all connected, mm-hmm. is the point.
Or maybe it's just take, not really give, but you know. Okay, that's awkward.
You were talking, but you're done. So the IPCC has just completed a series of landmark reports that chronicle an update to the current state of consensus science on climate change. In a sentence, here's what they found. On our current path, climate change could pose an irreversible existential risk to civilization as we know it, but we can still fix it if we decide to work together. And this is, I mean, again, would it have, I mean, if the sea levels rise, if droughts persist, if all these, you know, stories of concern are put forth and materialize and become reality in regards to climate change, human life will still be here. And I think that's the overall point. It won't go away. But what's interesting in this is that it just says that we'll have more conflict, that we'll have more wars. over the resources dwindling, be it space or food or whatever it is. And that just seems like an opportunity for people, for institutions of power, for governments to just control more. I mean, who's going to benefit from the conflict? Who's going to benefit from the war? I mean, it's almost to where, why would you want a solution if you were in power? Because it wouldn't really benefit you at all. The creation of more conflict would be the ultimate goal, if nothing else. Because if you could probably say that if we were to look at it environmentally, military is probably the largest contributor to climate change,
right,
to greenhouse gas, than any other force would be that military.
Yeah, the military-industrial cyclex, and aside from what they're spraying out of the nozzles in these airplanes, just burning fuel in that altitude has, you know, the global dimming thing. When they, after 9/11, parked all the jets virtually, if not nationwide, worldwide, you know, just the change in temperature in the next few days didn't have to do with what they were or weren't spraying. It was the fact that they weren't burning gasoline in the sky at the rates they were.
It's 5 minutes after the hour of two. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few minutes with more Paragon Radio right here on 90.1.
Shine, I would
Welcome. Two songs from Nirvana. Kurt's been dead for over 20 years now. Imagine that. That should make some people feel really old. And I hope it do. This is the Paragon Radio Program. I'm Benjamin, your host. We've been talking about things this evening. About the end of humanity or not the end of humanity. And how life is... Life wants to keep living. Life doesn't want to die. And the shadowy, elite, lizardy cabal of people who may or may not control this planet and parts of the solar system and or universe, while they may want to control and potentially euthanize you, they either are unable to, which is, you know, I mean, is something that people, I think, should take some stock in. Is that there's nothing that's all powerful. There's nothing that's omnipotent or omnipresent. I mean, even the NSA had its own issues, right? I mean, Edward Snowden was able to pull so much information. I mean, NSA is supposed to be the, I mean, the no such aid, and they're supposed to be omnipotent, supposed to be on that level. And even, you know, Edward Snowden was able to defeat their secrecy on a level. And that's an important thing to understand, because when you ascribe, you know, omnipotence to a part of the government or a cabal of people, when you do that, you are essentially giving up your own power. And that's a very, very important thing that needs to be driven home. Because if you want to be able to exert influence over your own life, you have to realize that you are the one that is in control of it. You want to blame the lizards and say that they're the ones that run the show, then in your mind, that's what you've just decided is the case. That's how you've decided that you want things to be. No, I mean, but there's no question that within humanity that we are all interdependent upon each other on all kinds of levels. And as we look at, you know, threats, future threats from climate change or whatever it is, there's been several studies that have been done, you know, about issues with the food supply and there being a direct correlation with political and social instability. Why did the Ukraine have, you know, their breakdown of society, their problems? Why did they force the president to flee before they tarred and feathered and strung him up? Because they were having economic problems. Because they had had a really bad grain yield. They had not been able to, people were yearning for stability. I mean, back when they would stand in bread lines, at the end of that, there was bread on the shelf, and maybe there wasn't bread on the shelf. And so the people decided that it was better the way things were before, or that it could be better in their own way, dealing with the oligarchy as opposed to the tyranny. I mean, that would be what would, and we're watching this. I mean, there's been several stories, you know, in the last week about how beef is now more expensive than it was during Reagan's first term. Inflation was pretty rough in the early 80s. And pork prices are going up too, because there's some sort of diarrhea virus in piglets. That really meant something to somebody in the on-air studio. So the cost of, piglets are not turning into pigs. Bacon is not being set on the table. Costs are going up. But the reality is that, you know, do you need to eat pigs and beef? Not necessarily. I mean, there's lots of other food that you can eat. I mean, steak is not, I mean, if that's what you're going to eat every night, you've got money anyway. You're probably pretty well insulated from any type of, you know, inflation in those prices. I mean, food is still available in this country. Food is ever present in this country. That's going to put a squeeze on some people. But, you know, again, that might be the deltas. You know, as opposed to people with a little more awareness, a little more wherewithal, being able to choose something else. But it's still going to be putting pressure overall on all things. And in America, I mean, we don't have to engage in social demonstration, or we don't engage in social demonstration and political demonstration. We don't make the government fear the people, because we are generally content with our shiny objects
and our huge giant TVs.
No, we're content with those. And we have full bellies. We have distended bellies. We have guts. And since those guts are full of all the processed foods that we can cram down our throats, I mean, we have no motivation to go because we're not hungry in March. That's just the reality of that. And that could change, though. But I don't think the government in this country really wants that to change. I think the power structure is very happy with the situation being what it is. Saw another interesting study. The title of this study, "The U.S. is an Oligarchy," study concludes. "The U.S. government does not represent the interests of the majority of the country's citizens, but is instead ruled by those of the rich and powerful," a new study from Princeton and Northwestern. The report, entitled "Testing Theories of American Politics, Elites, Interest Groups, and Average Citizens," used extensive policy data collected from the years between 1981 and 2002, and empirically determined the state of the U.S. political system. After sifting through nearly 1,800 U.S. policies enacted in that period and comparing them to the expressed preferences of average Americans and affluent Americans and large special interest groups, researchers concluded that the United States is dominated by its economic elite. I mean, I didn't know that until I read this article. The peer-reviewed study, which will be taught at these universities in September, says, "The central point that emerges from our research is that economic elites and organized groups representing business interests have substantial independent impacts on the U.S. government policy, while mass-based interest groups and average citizens have little or no independent influence." I feel like I should send that one directly to Michael T. He always likes to get so optimistic about the state of affairs. Researchers concluded that the U.S. government policies rarely align with the preferences of the majority of Americans, but do favor special interests and lobbying organizations. When a majority of American citizens disagree with economic elites or with organized interests, they generally lose. Moreover, because of the strong status quo bias built into the U.S. political system, even when fairly large majorities of Americans favor policy change, they generally do not get it. The positions of powerful interest groups are not substantially correlated with the preferences of average citizens, but the politics of average Americans and affluent Americans sometimes does overlap. It's merely a coincidence, the report says, with the interests of the average American being served mostly, almost exclusively, when it also serves those of the richest 10%. The theory of biased pluralism that the Princeton and Northwestern researchers believe the U.S. system fits holds that policy outcomes tend to tilt towards the wishes of corporations and business and professional associations. The study comes in the wake of the McCutcheon versus the FEC decision. The controversial piece, article refers to it as a piece of legislation, but it's of course not. It is a Supreme Court decision, and some people would say that it was a bit of legislation from the bench, and maybe so. There is no question that the political system in America is dominated by the economics of politics, which is, I mean, billions of dollars. It's big money. And America is an oligarchy, I guess. That's cute, isn't it? No more little guy goes to Washington and changes things. No, I mean, more. The people really don't have, I mean, what is the special interest groups of the people? I mean, the AARP, the NRA, I mean, who are we talking about? I mean, who goes to Washington and lobbies for American citizens?
Teachers' unions.
I mean, there's certainly K Street, there's certainly a lot of lobbying that's done on the behalf of corporations. And we've seen that, you know, I mean, in corporations clearly have a special place in the American legal and political system. They almost have more rights than individual people do when it comes to free speech at all. But to outright call America an oligarchy, like we're Russia or something. We're run by oligarchs. When was the last time you saw a picture of Barack Obama without a shirt on? Wrestling a pit bull or something like that.
When he went swimming in the Gulf of Mexico after the BP thing.
So it's been years.
Correct.
It's been absolutely years.
There was no bears in the water either.
I mean, how do you stop an oligarchy? What do you do to... how do you go about doing that? I mean, wouldn't all... I mean, and then that kind of begs the question... What country is not run like an oligarchy? What country is not run by extremely powerful special interests who own resources and run large corporations? Where is that country? Iceland? Think Iceland? Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was
pretty
Iceland.
Close.
I mean, at least when they had that whole banker fiasco thing in 2008, the Manic Depression, the Great Manic Depression, from 2008 until question marks, they ended up putting a lot of people in jail and voting those politicians out of office. But, I mean, come on.
And a lot like Switzerland, we're talking about a small population, a small landmass. It's an island, you know, very, very homogeneous as far as culture and language and things. So it was easier to accomplish that. But I can't think of any other ones besides Iceland.
But that's just kind of the nature of things. And I think, you know, there's this kind of belief that what's good for GM is good for America. I mean, that used to be true, right?
Right.
And now it's kind of like what's good for, you know, Walmart's good for America. It's just we really just changed the corporation. Where, you know, when they said what's good for GM is good for America, that meant that, you know, America was an industrial powerhouse that had the an economy that would pay blue collar workers, you know, good money. I mean, that's what it meant, right? And now what's good for Walmart is good for America means that even though you just got a demotion and they cut your hours, you can shop at Walmart, so your miniature paycheck and your EBT credit card will go a little bit farther. You can stretch it a little bit farther because they're rolling back prices at Walmart. But I mean, it's important because you look at when the Supreme Court decided the McCutcheon versus FEC case, and they basically said that, you know, if you're wealthy and you want to donate the maximum you can to individual candidates, you can do that across the board. You can, there's no cap. There used to be a cap of $124,000 or something like that. Now there's a guy who is an electrical engineer in Alabama who did very well for himself, decided that donating $123,500 per election cycle was not enough. He wanted to be able, he did not want to be limited in how much he could donate to various candidates and super PACs and regular PACs. And how do you argue with that? It's the man's money. He just wants to be able to do it. It's unfortunately the toxic nature of things. Our perspectives here in the good old US of A. And if that's, you know, if we can't figure out a way to go, well, maybe that's not the best of ideas, then I mean, that's the, that kind of society is going to yield a power base that is plutocratic, small, and acts like an oligarchy. An oligarchy, of course, being a government that's run by not one powerful interest, but many powerful interests, but still a very small amount of people. So then America is run by who? ExxonMobil, a couple pharmaceutical companies,
Let's not forget about Boeing or Lockheed Martin. I mean, who else would America be run by? Who else are the big ones out there?
United Defense.
Well, right. You know, so we got that. We got
Federal Reserve.
Okay.
The Catholic Church still.
The Catholic Church?
Well, it's the corporation, not.
Did the Catholic Church lobby the federal government?
Yeah, they're a 501c3.
No, but do they lobby the federal government?
I don't think so. I think the Pope just calls directly. I don't know if he has to lobby much.
I mean, who is the. You know, who are these people? We got defense contractors.
Oh, yeah, Israel.
Pharmaceutical companies.
Good call.
No, Israel would probably be a good one. The 51st state. But, yeah, you know, it's just important to be honest. Just like with the McCutcheon versus FEC case, it's like, look, America politically is not a one-man, one-vote, it-matters kind of system. It's a pay-to-play. If you got money, you get a play. If you don't have money, then go away. I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And let's, you know, also be honest that it's not the will of the people that, you know, is what the power, and that's not where the consent of the governed comes from. It comes from the ability of, you know, corporations to exert their power and influence over things. And that is, you know, that's not an alpha society. I mean, we're definitely kappas or deltas within this situation. We're manipulated and we're dependent because not only is the government completely controlled like an oligarchy by these corporations, we're dependent on these corporations for our very livelihoods. I mean, literally, the economy would fall apart if the military-industrial complex were to vanish overnight. And, you know, hey, that might in the end be for the better, right? But it would be a little confusing to begin with because the American economy, much to the dismay of free market capitalists out there, has been run by the socializing of warfare, defense spending, Keynesian economics. I mean, that's what our economy is based upon, is deficits to pay for wars. I mean, there's also, you know, some ingenuity that takes place from time to time. But for the most part, we're talking about dropping bombs. I don't know how you argue with that. I don't know how you argue with America as an oligarchy. I don't know how you argue with America as an empire. I don't know how you argue with these things, that America is a pay-to-play political system. How do you argue with these things? People just don't want to think of America in that way because we're told what America was supposed to be starting at a very young age. And some people hold on to the vestiges of that. But even if you go back to the Constitution, the way it was written, and the Founding Fathers and the original intent, I mean, they didn't anticipate for the poor to be able to vote. They wanted guys with land,
right,
and slaves to do the voting. And, you know, you could say that sounds, you know, very insensitive in 2014, but that was really the way people thought about things back then.
Right. I'm sure there were, you know, when you're talking about literacy rates being super low, the fact that, you know, there weren't books everywhere or libraries yet.
Well, literacy rates that were similar to the NCAA, right?
Maybe. I'm not for sure what the NCAA's literacy rates are.
They're not high. Right?
No, it's, well, my favorite quote ever was Montel Williams asking Dexter Manley about the fact he got a bachelor's degree from Oklahoma State University and he was literally illiterate, which is even a funny phrase. And he said, well, how did you sign your first NFL contract? And he said, I may not be able to read, but I can count zeros. And I believe he was an NCAA
absolutely
illiterate with a bachelor's degree. He did have a PhD in smashing heads, though. Um, what was the point of the NCAA? Oh, yeah, the representative form of our governance now wasn't necessarily about distance or lack of technology. It was, a lot of it was keeping the adults out of the mix because they were scared of mob rule. And since the betas way outnumbered the alphas, they didn't want them, you know, speaking their mind. The will of the people would have gone awry real quick if it were set up any other way.
816-931-5534. 931-KKFI. About 25 minutes, we'll have a new suicide for you. If you'd like to, you can also text the show, 816-301-5731. 816-301-5731. So what the end result with the oligarchy's got to be
world domination.
It can't go backwards. It has to continue with the consolidation of power. And then you just get the components of the oligarchy that fight themselves and are vying for control within that system. And the solution, just like it's always been, is an internal one and it's a spiritual one. Or it's the expanding earth. Boom!
May not be a solution, but it is definitely a game changer. Did you see that season 4, episode 2 of Game of Thrones set world records in BitTorrenting?
I heard about that, yeah. I did not actually see the episode, though.
I haven't either. I read a couple news stories about the fact that within an hour, like 200,000 people were seeding it. Something crazy. 105 million downloads in the first day.
Illegal downloads. So we're talking BitTorrents. We're talking illegally downloaded.
Correct. And did you see the CEO of HBO, the head honcho guy that commented on it? Said it was they're in the business of creating addicts and that he was fine with it.
Well, sure.
Illegal or not, the more eyeballs on their show, the better he feels.
Well, at some point they have to realize it's free marketing.
Well, at some point you got to figure maybe somebody at HBO put that on Pirate Bay themselves.
I have no idea what Game of Thrones is about. I figured it
oligarchies,
was
oligarchies. Like, come on, man.
I figured it's about vampires, no. But it's about oligarchies, huh?
Right.
Okay.
There's
or monarchies. Like, no, it's not about monarchies.
Seven vying oligarchs vying for control of the entire land of thrones, whatever it's called. And I've seen the first few seasons. I'm not up to date by any means, but yeah, the king of everything dies and. All the different groups scattered about the kingdom are trying to get that throne.
Bacon pork prices rise as deadly diarrhea virus wipes out Michigan pigs.
I've heard a lot of pork consumers complaining of similar symptoms lately. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Subway finally got
yoga mats out of the bread?
Yeah, the yoga mat chemical out of the bread. This last week was the first yoga mat chemical free week for Jared at Subway.
Like the Bundy Ranch standoff, the internet, just the sheer quickness of public opinion can make changes, even if they're incremental.
Did you hear about the guy who he had gotten convicted of armed robbery and sentenced to 13 years in prison? I believe he lives in St. Louis. He's a Missouri guy. And he got, you know, convicted of armed robbery, sentenced to 13 years in prison. He was told to, I guess he was out on bail for the trial. He was told to go home and wait for instructions from the Missouri Department of Corrections. Well, they forgot about him for 13 years.
Time served.
I want to say he was supposed to be in for 13 years, and right around the time they were supposed to release him, they finally realized that he had never been in prison at all.
So he's still sitting in his living room.
In that time, he started a family,
started several businesses, was paying taxes, had a business license, you know, was sending his kids to school, and it actually kind of reformed his life. And then one day he's just sitting there, you know, eating Cheerios with the family in the morning, and the SWAT team comes in, decides that it's time to take him to prison. And he's been there now for, you know, 6 months. And it's a very interesting story in that he literally, you know, they told him 13 years, and it scared him straight.
Right.
He got pulled over several times. He was doing his taxes. He was like, I wasn't hiding. I was using my real name. You know, he got pulled over, and I mean, you know, when you get pulled over, the cops, they run you. I mean, if you would like to, you would assume that if you were supposed to be in prison, that would pop up on the thing when they ran your name.
Well, insert St. Louis joke here, and I'm sure you've got at least 5 minutes of stand-up built into this one.
I mean, everyone that knows me knows how I feel about St. Louis. But this guy definitely deserves to not be in prison, right?
I think if the point is rehabilitation, then he's rehabilitated.
I mean, that would be the idea, right? And everyone knows that that's really not what they do in prison. It's definitely...
Bohica?
Correct. That's, you know, yeah. Rehabilitation in prison is not the reality of that situation by any means. Did you hear, there's another story about prison. I really think that guy, we should find out his name. Because the poor man... And that really is just an unfortunate thing because he didn't do anything wrong. If the judge says I'm 13 years in prison, you go home and wait for us, we'll come get you. What do you think you're gonna call? I mean, who's gonna call?
Be not like, me.
And not me either. Really didn't do anything wrong. What about this Alabama journalist? Did you hear this story? He got sentenced to 5 months. In prison for not removing some posts on his blog about a politician. The blogger's name is Roger Schuller.
Schnauzer?
And he was hauled off to jail for writing about a politically, not a politician, but a politically connected Alabama lawyer.
Ooh.
Now, until last week, Schuller was the only known journalist in the Western Hemisphere jailed for doing his job. Schuller, a former sports reporter and university editor who developed the political blog Legal Schnauzer, is known as a controversial figure in his community. But even his critics conceded that a court order banning him from writing anything about the alleged extramarital affair of a man rumored to be running for Congress was likely unconstitutional. And a First Amendment outrage. A Shelby, Alabama county judge ruled that Schuller could not continue writing about the alleged affair of Robert Riley, son of a former governor and also a rumored candidate for Congress. When Schuller refused to comply with the order, the police came to his home one evening and arrested him for contempt of court. It's a civil offense, meaning it doesn't carry a long-term criminal penalty. But officials use jail as a means of forcing compliance with the order. So Schuller sat in jail until he complied. That's pretty amazing, though, getting put in jail for writing about. I mean, you know, you can, I believe you can be sued for defamation
or
libel, you know, if what you're doing, you can use your First Amendment. And I think the whole idea is that people should be allowed to say what they want to say, and they should be allowed to defame people too. I mean, people should be allowed to libel people also. And then if you were defamed or libeled, you should have some sort of legal recourse, or at least an opportunity to slap the out of somebody for talking all that smack. But the idea that, yeah, I mean, it's just being put in jail for that. It's the power of the internet. A blog that probably nobody's reading.
Except
Legal Schnauzer? I mean, that seems like some hard-hitting journalism, doesn't it?
Well, small-town politics could get you caught up in a jiffy. There was an incident similar in Sedalia where, and this was, you know, as the internet was just coming online, there was a local guy printing all of this town rumors that, yeah, they twisted him up in a knot quicker than not paying your taxes would.
Well, that's, you know, people spending too much time on the website topics. Right, Jake?
If the internet was an all-you-can-eat buffet, I would be much bigger.
You would have been asked to leave long ago.
You've been here 4 hours.
You're so fat. You eat vegetable. Since 1931, the U.S. Supreme Court has found that the First Amendment prohibits a court order restraining anyone from saying or publishing something, even if it is defamatory. In Neer versus Minnesota, the U.S. Supreme Court found that Jay Neer, who published a scandal sheet about Minnesota politics, could not be enjoined by the courts from publishing. Later cases have upheld that decision, most notably in 1971 when the New York Times and the Washington Post sought to publish the Pentagon Papers. In short, if you intend to commit libel or slander, you can be punished or sued after the fact, but not stopped from the act itself. But that's exactly what happened with this Roger Schuller, the editor of Legal Schnauzer. And of course, this is, you know, a county judge in Alabama. You know, this is not necessarily, this is not an issue. We're not talking NSA stuff. This is not Glenn Greenwald, you know, level journalism here. But it is kind of interesting in that people are, I mean, and we're seeing this not just in regards to journalism, but being shut down before they even have an opportunity to commit the crime. It's all good. You want to keep the criminals off the street. But you still, I mean, can you be proven guilty before you commit a crime?
It's not crime. It's
right,
right.
Crime. That's kind of what that's about, isn't it? I mean, that's what this truly comes down to.
Well,
it becomes almost like there, you know, like it is a thought crime. Bad news, but you know, hey, journalism's kind of over anyway, though, isn't it? It's coming to an end.
Yeah, in the old-fashioned sense of who, what, when, where, and why, for sure.
All right, it's about 15 minutes until the top of the hour when we have a brand new compact disc full of suicides for you. Jesse, any more sinkholes?
I'm looking right now. I'm not finding them, but...
Good. Hashtag sinkhole.
Hashtag sinkhole.
Another byproduct of the expanding Earth.
Certainly. I did find an interesting list of counties where you don't want to be when in 2 weeks when the stock markets crash.
Broward County? Is that where Miami
is? Oh,
is
the stock market going to crash in 2 weeks?
Well, it's always in 2 weeks. And then in 2 weeks, it'll be like 2 weeks.
How about 58 signs that the American economy, I love those compiled lists also, you know, the 25 telltale signs that the American
economy. And every link on the list clicks to an order form for some book.
Well, really, I mean.
Or Jim the Racist Gold Dealer.
Yes.
Yeah.
An opportunity to buy some more gold.
Bullion.
Which apparently they've been spraying on us for years because it's all over the ground.
You're not going to let that go, are you?
No, I'm just teasing. It's an Anunnaki joke.
Anunnaki? What you know about some Anunnaki, man?
I know all of it.
No, I know.
Zachariah Sitchin was my preschool teacher.
The Grays.
What do you think's wrong with me, Jesse?
Did you see Reuben Hurricane Carter died?
Oh, no.
I saw Reuben Carter speak one time. It's pretty amazing. You got to give it up to a guy who spent, you know, over 10 years of his life in solitary confinement, that he would be able to share a social moment,
right,
and be able to speak in complete sentences.
Or stop talking. You either want to remain quiet or blabber. But I guess you could refine your eloquence if you had only yourself as an audience.
No, I'm pretty sure that makes you go crazy.
Well, supposed to.
I think that's what they, yeah, that's the goal there.
Genius and insanity are very closely related.
You ready for Ebola? We're going to stop, as a precaution, it's been suggested that we stop eating bats.
Like bats?
Not baseball bats.
Okay.
The flying mammal.
Does anybody eat those?
Yeah, people in Guinea do. Apparently, that's it's a popular thing in West Africa, is the bats.
Are they genetically modified bats?
It sounds like bad news, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, there can't be any meat on them. It's like fur and wings, right? And a little bone and guts. What part would you eat?
Probably the part with the Ebola, and that's why they're saying
the
that you
guano,
shouldn't. Yeah.
Right, it's like grain peanut butter or something.
And they're also saying that a SARS-like MERS virus spreads among healthcare workers. What does that mean? A SARS-like MERS virus. Does that even mean anything?
It's the diarrhea pig thing in hospitals now.
What about all the vaccinated people who keep getting all the diseases that they were vaccinated against?
Correct.
I read an article attacking Jenny McCarthy. And not for being engaged to Donnie Wahlberg, but for
not vaccinating
that.
Your kids.
No, but for, yeah, being a opponent of vaccinations and now being apparently a proponent for vaccinations.
Well, and that ties back into my theory that life is inextinguishable. The more penicillin you dump on these things, the tougher the strain gets. Even the microbial universe is inextinguishable, and we've been trying for a long time.
Well, let's try the phones. 816-931-5534. Good morning. You're on the radio.
What kind of microbe are you? Turn your radio down.
Turn your radio down.
Ben?
Yes, you're on the radio.
Radio is down.
Cool. What's going
on? I can barely hear you, man.
Well, that's probably an issue with your phone, no?
Yeah, maybe. I'll try back.
All right, very well. Very well. He'll give it a shot later. You could always try the non-corporately sponsored text line, too, 300-301-5731. You could try that also. We'll try this again. It's a relaxed show down here as we sputter into the 3 o'clock hour. Good morning. You're on the radio. Oh, boy.
Hello?
Yep, you're on the radio.
Hey, man, what's going on? It's Big Dog calling back.
What's up, Big Dog?
It's a lot better. I don't know what happened. But anyway, Jake.
What up?
I wanted you to, if you could, which I'm pretty sure you can, expound on what you mean by the Earth expanding.
Everything grows when you add sunlight and water. Or a food source in
Okay, so basically you're telling me you have no scientific evidence whatsoever. You're just giving me a line of crap.
No, the scientific evidence...
I'm about the question.
This, everything...
God, you guys, I swear.
Okay, Big Dog, if you go... How about this?
Big Dog.
Get on your favorite Google machine and type expanding Earth and go hog wild. The evidence is everywhere. And I don't know if you need a degree in science or some scientific paper to point to the fact that everything is growing. Plants, animals, the universe.
Can you point us to some Bible passages? Right. That
yeah, in the beginning, specifically, read Genesis, Big Dog. They talk about the fact that there is no oceans or rain. There's just kind of a mist about. All of that comes later, the great flood, you know, you scoot on down in the Old Testament a little bit farther. There's biblical evidence of an expanding Earth. Giants, the Nephilim, you know, creatures were bigger. The fossil record, a smaller planet, less gravity and more oxygen would inhibit the growth of larger animals. I mean, there's scientific evidence everywhere. And just because you haven't ran across it yet doesn't mean it's there. And because I can't go www.expandingearth.com and satisfy you doesn't mean it's not the case either. But if you get on your favorite Google machine, my favorite is Neil Adams, N-E-A-L-E, Adams like Adams family, and Expanding Earth, and go hog wild. And then after you see that, call back and yell at me. It was in Suicide 308, so I know you heard it. And if you want to go straight to my website, the video I'm speaking of is linked right underneath it.
But again, what's the purpose of the expanding Earth? I mean, what does that either prove or disprove, or how does that make sense in a worldview? What does it allow you to understand, I guess? I mean, how is that information useful?
I think it's one of the pieces. If you look at, you know, deep history, things like, you know, these massive stone blocks on the pyramids that they're putting with, you know, water dating in the Sphinx, you know, back 20, 30,000 years ago, if the planet was smaller, these feats would be more feasible because gravity would be different. If you talk about the fact that September means 7, October means 8, November means 9, December means 10, but those aren't the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th month. There's been a shift somewhere. If you talk about,
You mean that the Earth has expanded in like the last 2,000 years?
I don't know when it happened last. I've only been alive for 36 years, and I don't believe any of the historians or the PhD knuckleheads in the oligarchy to be honest with anything like that. But when it does go, I think it happens rapidly over the span of a short period of time, and then there's long bits of stasis. So the last time, I don't know if it's a Fibonacci thing, if it's, you know, 1,000 years, then 3,000 years, then 5,000 years. I don't know. And even the word gear gets all screwy when the planet is growing. The day gets screwy. The big dog would put, the creation story in a better light when you consider the fact that a day hasn't always meant 24 hours. The Feast of Saturnalia, the year used to be 360 days, and then all of a sudden it's 365, so they have these 5 extra days in the winter they don't know what to do with when they celebrate the fact that the Earth's rotation was a perfect circle at one point. I mean, there's pieces everywhere, so it ties, for me, the fossil record, the evolutionary punctuated equilibrium, the Pangea nonsense.
But does it explain who actually owns the Federal Reserve?
Correct. The people with enough money to spray aluminum in the sky to stop it from happening again. Because the artificialness of corporations, whether it's money or borders of countries, will be erased before everybody's eyes, and there's no amount of propaganda that can feed anybody that will erase the fact that there's a brand new island right by Japan that wasn't there last week.
This is the first I've heard about this, but it makes absolute sense without hearing scientific proof when you look at the way
everything
is expanding, including the universe,
right.
And
right.
We're, you know, it's kind of, I mean, I've always thought of it as like, some kind of solid proof that, like, you don't actually die.
No, you don't.
It's like the old, I can't remember what it was, but it's an old Indian story about the lotus of the universe. Have you ever heard that one? I wish I could find it right now, but I probably can't.
I mean, it's an interesting idea. I don't know that I need, I mean, the point being is that we can look at what we are told that we know about the Earth. And unless you're a geologist, I mean, you are just, or an astrophysicist or a theoretical physicist or whatever, you would just then be regurgitating information that somebody that you think is really smart said.
Right.
I mean, the
carbon dating only dates the carbon.
Well, that, and you can look at the world. I mean, there were Greeks who sat around way before Copernicus and figured out what Copernicus figured out.
Right.
About the Earth revolving around the, you know, about the way the orbit